This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And in the studio with us today is NASA astronaut Charlie Precourt. Hello, Charlie.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming in. We need somebody to talk to.
Yeah, really. I mean, we've had a lot of NASA people, but you're the first astronaut we've gotten so far. I'm kind of disappointed in that.
What?
I was hoping
we'd be disappointed in a four-time shuttle.
No. I was hoping that we'd have more astronauts.
Well, we have some here this evening.
Yes, let's talk about exactly that. You have Michael Collins.
We do. We have Joe Engel and Mike Collins in the Theater in the Woods this evening. And I'm lucky enough to be the host for that. So we're going to reminisce about their experiences getting up to Apollo 11. And also talk a little bit about the future, where the space program's going. So it's going to be fun.
It'll be
a really neat night.
So I guess you guys are excited that we're finally going back to the moon.
We are. You know, the program had a lot of good logic when we decided to go from Apollo to shuttle and space station. The thought about being in space for long periods of time is challenging for the human body, and so the idea of space station was to be close to home but be able to stay in space for extended periods. Now that we're getting through that phase of learning, I think getting back to the moon and establishing a base there for long-term exploration as a stepping stone to Mars is a logical next step. So that's what I think we're going to be seeing here in the near future.
Wow.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering when they're going to put the McDonald's on the moon.
I was going to ask, are they going to go back to one of the former Apollo landing sites and just check out the equipment?
I think eventually that might happen. The interest right now is in the south pole of the moon because there are some large craters there that are shadowed from the sun, and there's large masses of ice, water ice, which of course provides, you know, subsistence for availability of water is critical for long duration stays.
And
it also allows you to not only have water for drinking and other purposes, but you could break it down into fuel too.
Yep.
So huge amount of promise there in terms of logistics. I think about it like we have the McMurdo station on Antarctica, right? And we send mm-hmm. people there and they stay for extended periods and they rotate out. That's kind of where we're headed, I think, with exploring the moon next and learning about the origins of our solar system and the universe by being able to research in place on the surface of the moon, as well as learn how to live off our planet in an environment like that will set us up for being able to go to Mars.
You're not going to be landing on the dark side of the moon, though, right? You'll stay just around the Terminator?
Well, we will. So this is at the pole, at the South Pole, and it's probably close to the Terminator where the sun is, you have the ability to be in the shade as well as in the sun, and that has its advantages too from a research standpoint, from a basing standpoint. There's a lot of advantages to that. You're not in constant sunlight,
right.
And you're not in constant dark, so you can manage accordingly. So,
well, constant sunlight's great if you want to break down water into fuel, because you can use the electricity.
And you know, the face of the moon that faces us, of course, is all we've ever really seen in extended manner. And so the idea that we could be at the pole where there's resources, where there's ability to set up observatories, where you can have the sun blocked from the observatory, there's all kinds of good benefits to what they're trying to set up. Whether we go back to the I'm sure at some point in the future we'd go back to the original landing sites. But it's an interesting process for the scientists to pick landing sites and the logic they put into that.
Well, you know, it's not just the Apollo landing sites that are up there, but there's also a number of spacecraft that were literally crashed into the moon and were sending pictures back just before impact.
That's right.
I'm wondering if those are going to be explored too. They've been there for almost 50 years.
Very possibly could be. You realize that on the day that Neil and Buzz sat down on Apollo 11, there was a rocket from the Soviet Union did just that on the backside of the moon. It went into the surface of the moon on the same day, and there was actually some coordination between the control center in Moscow and Houston to ensure that the trajectories weren't going to intersect.
Right. Now, if they dropped it on the back side of the moon, did they get they didn't get any data back?
I don't know. I don't know how, you know, that was not something that was broadly reported. So
that's news to me.
I wonder if Neil and Buzz actually got to see it before it crashed.
I don't think so, no.
It's a pretty big space out there.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's a pretty small moon, too. But, hey, well, that'll be another site for archaeologists in the future to go check out. because there's a ton of junk up there.
No doubt. By the time they get back to one of the rovers, it'll be up on blocks with no wheels.
And the batteries and radio missing.
Yeah, the batteries and radio.
Or, worse yet, some space alien will look at that thing and say, hey, man, lowrider,
yeah,
let's go.
Yeah. Pimp it out.
Yeah, pimp it out.
You know, I saw an interesting program the other day talking about the development of the spacesuit.
Mm-hmm.
And how all the companies that NASA approached built these rigid, semi-rigid, clunky things that astronauts could hardly do anything in. And the company that makes Playtex bras said, hey, we've got one. And that's the one you guys ended up using.
Well, the spacesuits are a complicated beast because you are in the vacuum of space and you have to have your own atmosphere around you. So being able to contain that pressure that you have to have inside requires some rigid structure, and so you're not walking around inside a balloon, right? So it's a tough problem. You have to have joints that move and not leak.
Don't
restrict you as much as possible. Doing spacewalks to build the space station was really challenging because of the nature of that requirement. You got to stay alive. You got to be in a pressured volume. You're basically in your own little spacecraft when you're in one of those.
And you got to stay alive for a long period of time if you're trying to put something together. It's not like an hour.
Those,
you could be out there
a lot of
those
spacewalks were 6 hours. Some went much longer than that. So it's a long time to be outside.
Now, were you ever able to spacewalk yourself?
I trained to spacewalk. At one point, it was contemplated that I would go to the space station on a six-month mission to do some of the assembly. But along the way, they asked me to run the astronaut program, so I became the chief of the astronaut corps in 1998-99.
Oh, very interesting.
And I did that for a little over 4 years, so I gave up the slot to go to the space station. But I did train to do the spacewalks, and as a shuttle commander, typically we wouldn't be the one to go out the
door. Yeah, I wouldn't think that.
Typically, we would put a mission specialist out the door and have the commander and the pilot maintain control of the ship. So.
Did you ever refer to any of those people as the red shirts?
Actually, on my very first flight, we had what we called, I think we called ourselves red shift and blue shift, if I remember right, because we had the crew split into two so we could do 24-hour operations. Half the crew would sleep while the other crew was awake doing laboratory stuff on my very first flight.
You know, the one thing that is I've always wondered about, in the spacesuit, how do you scratch an itch?
You don't.
Oh, I was going to say, I'd be in real...
That's
either that or
painful.
I'd sneeze on the visor.
There are a few places that you can, like you can rub your heel against the side of your boot and the foot restraint. You can sometimes get your nose up against something on the faceplate of the... But in general, there are a lot of things you just can't do.
Wow.
So. You know, that's
the hardship of space right there.
There it is, not being able to scratch that itch.
It's amazing what people ask about.
Well, you know, here's another issue that I see with the spacesuit, and this one has to do with survival. What do you do if you get thirsty? You just can't pop the thing open and grab a glass of water.
We actually have a drink bag that is filled with your favorite beverage before you go out.
Favorite non-alcoholic beverage.
Exactly. You know, mango juice or water or what most
jungle
most
juice.
Most often it's just water, but is
a little bit of rocket fuel.
It's like a bladder that fits into your suit, and there's a straw that comes up through the helmet, and is basically poised right in front of your chin, so that at any point in time you can turn your head, grab the receptacle for that, bite down on it, and sip out of the bags.
I never thought of that one.
Well, you know.
But you know what's interesting about these questions is people are thinking about what everyday trivia is on Earth and how complicated that is in space.
Everything becomes more complicated.
That's an appreciation that I think more people need to have, because there's a lot of folks that think, oh, it's just like getting in an airplane and going somewhere, and it is not.
Right.
You're taking everything that you normally have to depend on, and you're going for a lengthy period of time. You got to think through all these little details.
Yep.
People just don't know how important gravity really is to us.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I understand when they first were considering the whole space station concept, they had to redesign all the mechanical tools. Because here on Earth, you grab a ratchet, you tighten a bolt, big deal. Mm-hmm. But in space, you got nothing to work against. You got no gravity.
You have to have foot restraint so you can react against something.
Right, right.
The gravity thing is interesting, too. I forget one time I got a call from Houston to do something, and it doesn't matter what it was at this point, but I always would write down what they needed. So because a lot of the instructions came with certain technical locations that we had coded and or you know, inputs to a computer or whatever it was, and so I couldn't find the dang pen or pencil or whatever I was using at the time, and it had floated off, and it was right here over my head. And of course, you never look for something by tipping your head back and looking at the ceiling. Yep. You always look down and around you, of course. And I eventually found it floating right over my head.
Here's another big thing, and this really does set the mood for the day. How do you sleep in space?
You know, the first couple of evenings, nights in space, when you sleep, it's a little bit awkward because I think most of us want to have that feeling that we're laying down and we're pressed against a mattress that
and covers on us. Yeah,
you've actually rolled over and you're laying down. Otherwise, you feel like you're standing up trying to sleep, right? So it is a little unusual. So they actually created the sleeping bags with a built-in pillow on them and a strap that is Velcroed that you can pull across your head to push your head against the pillow and hold your head against it. That's good for one or two nights, but then you acclimate and your body doesn't care anymore and you get into the sleeping bag and just float and you sleep wonderfully. The problem was finding enough time to actually sleep because you're so busy.
Well,
I typically would only get 4 hours of sleep, but after the first couple of nights, you didn't care. You just floated and it was very, very comfortable. You don't have to roll over because you get a hot spot on the mattress.
Right.
You know, it's very comfortable. It's like floating in your swimming pool, but you don't get wet.